Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Oye Como Va, brought to us by Santana. We'll be hearing more about and from Santana later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us today from ClassicBands.com and Dave White's About.com guide. Question number one, which of the following musical tidbits is actually true? Is it A, Mr. Green Jeans, remember him from Captain Kangaroo, was Frank Zappa's father? B, Gene Simmons, remember him from Kiss, had a tongue transplant from a cow? C, the earliest recorded number one hit was Semper Fidelis by the U.S. Marine Corps Band? Or was it D, all the above are actually true, or E, none of the above is actually true? Question number two, the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA, created the Platinum Award for singles that sell in excess of 2 million copies and albums that sell in excess of 1 million copies. The first Platinum album went to whom? Was it A, Aerosmith, B, The Eagles, C, James Taylor, D, The Beatles, or E, the U.S. Marine Corps Band? Hint, here's a snippet from one of this group's hits. So who is this band? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section for today's program is Today in Music History, brought to us by MusicOrb.com and BGORecords.com, and today is the weekend of August 26th and 27th. Now, if you were born on August 26th, you share a birthday with Richard Cowsill of the Cowsills, Hare, 1950 on August 26th, and Branford Marsalis, the jazz saxophonist. He was born on August 26th, 1960. Or if you were born on August 27th, you share a B-day with Umberto Giordano, born on August 27th, 1867. August 27th, also, B.J. Thomas was born. Raindrops keep falling on my head. He was born on that day back in 1942. Deaths on August 27th include Brian Epstein. He was the Beatles' manager. He died of a drug overdose at age of 32 back in 1967. And Stevie Ray Vaughan, the blues guitarist. He died in a helicopter crash, age 35, August 27th, 1990. Miscellany in music history this weekend, well, back in 1892, you may remember, New York City Metropolitan Opera House catches fire. And back in 1957 this weekend, it was Debbie Reynolds' Tammy hits number one. Back in 1965, Sonny and Cher, I Got You, Babe, hits number one this weekend. 1967, The Beatles, Mick Jagger, and Marianne Faithfull meet Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And back in 1973, finally, 10cc make their stage debut in Isle of Man. NCC. In local rock news, we see this article by Ed Condren, News and Observer, published on March 18, 2011, entitled Full Circle for Tinsley Ellis. When Tinsley Ellis started working on his latest album, Speak No Evil, he realized he was back to his blues rock roots, right where he started. I have certainly come full circle with this record, Ellis said from his Atlanta home. This is the kind of music I played in high school. This album is 1973 all over again for me, and I'm really happy about that. While coming of age during the late 60s, Ellis, 53, became a blues rock maniac, courtesy of Cream. Everybody says that Jimi Hendrix is the guy who jump-started blues rock, but I swear it was Cream, he said. Cream just blew me away. By the time the 80s hit, he had embraced traditional blues. I was a purist 30 years ago, Ellis said. I have no regrets playing that way. I loved it. During the 90s, I busted out of the wah-wah pedal and had fun with that. Ellis, who appeared last spring at Southland Ballroom in Raleigh, is aging well. He's still a strong writer and outstanding guitarist and a terrific showman, but he's also become a more expressive singer. I may not be the biggest name in the world, but I've been having a blast doing this for so many years, he said. I'm not doing what's popular, but that's all right. The same was true during the 1980s. Back then, I was the antidote to Thomas Dolby's She Blinded Me with Science, Ellis said. Today, I'm the antidote to American Idol, which to me is just urban yodeling. I think we need a little more than that in music. Ellis realizes the world has changed, but he hasn't altered his music to suit it. Two of the Speak No Evil tracks are more than 6 minutes. Maybe that's pushing it today, he said. I know the world is suffering from attention deficit disorder, and that's a shame. I remember listening to entire albums. I remember listening to the Allman Brothers' 10-minute jams. It's a shame that people are missing out on that. Ellis expects his next album will be in the vein of Speak No Evil. I'll probably hear it from the blues purists, but there aren't that many blues purists left, he said. I'm just going to follow my gut and make the music that appeals the most to me. Right now, it's the style of music I loved while growing up. This next article is brought to us by Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, plunges into music from 2007, Go Far in Life, Be a Musician, Much Ado About Noting. The scientific research leaves little doubt there is a direct correlation between music education and success later in life. Studies suggest that no matter how old you are, learning to play a musical instrument can make you an all-around smarter person. And even if you're not the musician type, it seems that simply listening to certain kinds of music can aid in learning. Theory. Students with extensive musical training excel in other academic subjects too. Study. Nations' emphasis on music education and their academic standing in the world, conducted by the International Association for the Evaluation of Educational Achievement back in 1988. This report looked at the school systems of three countries, Hungary, the Netherlands, and Japan, whose students consistently score among the highest in the world at math, reading, and science. Results? It's true. All three of these high-achieving nations require music and vocal training in elementary and middle schools. A related U.S. study, Music Majors and Medical School, found that American students who majored in music were far more likely to be accepted into competitive medical schools than non-musicians. It also studied the reading scores of 7,500 university students and found that music majors reportedly earn the highest scores. They beat out those who majored in biology, chemistry, math, and even English. Theory. Students who are musicians cope with stress better than non-musicians. Study. Musicians and Emotional Health, conducted by the University of Texas. This 1998 study gave 362 first-year university students three tests that measured their emotional health, performance anxiety, and alcohol consumption. Results: The musicians in the group perform better in all of these tests than non-musicians. They generally had a brighter outlook and drank less. Theory, listening to Baroque music helps you think. Study, Baroque music and learning a foreign language by Giorgio Lorenzov, a Bulgarian psychologist. In the 1950s, Lorenzov created a learning regimen in which some of his students were taught a foreign language while listening to music in the background. But it was a specific type of music, Baroque, a style of 17th and 18th classical music, and he played only slow selections that ran at 60 beats per minute. In a second control group, students were taught in silence. Results? Lozana found that the Baroque group, 1, could learn a foreign language much faster than non-listeners could, and 2, retain nearly 100% of the language when tested again 4 years later. Lozanov claimed that the human mind has an optimum learning state that occurs when heartbeat, breath rate, and brain waves are smoothly synchronized and the body is relaxed. But the mind is concentrated and ready to receive new information. He claimed that his students could learn up to 1,200 new words a day using his Baroque music method. A later study performed by an Australian doctor named John Diamond confirmed Lazanov's results by proving that the opposite is also true. Diamond found that certain musical rhythms could actually prevent learning and retention while studying. Any song with an interrupted beat, such as most rock and hip-hop songs, makes concentration more difficult. Unlike Baroque, rock and rap songs are out of sync with the body's pulse, according to Diamond. This next article from the same source as the last one is entitled Music Class. So you want to get a musical education, huh? Check out some of the most celebrated conservatories in the world. This article talks about the Juilliard School in New York, the Berklee College of Music in Boston, and finally the Jacobs School of Music in Bloomington, Indiana. Humble beginnings, Charles Campbell was teaching German at Indiana University in the early 1900s, but he loved music. In 1907, he organized a recital at the university and put the entire proceeds of the show into a fund to establish a music school. In 1909, he taught the first classes, although they were non-credit classes, and the next year, the Indiana University School of Music was up and running. The school recently changed its name thanks to a huge endowment in 2005 from philanthropists Barbara and David Jacobs, but its curriculum has remained consistent over the years, focusing primarily on classical music education and offering degrees in everything from music theory to voice to cello. Noted alumni include songwriters Hoagie Carmichael, violinist Joshua Bell, opera singer Sylvia McNair and Angela Brown, songwriter and record producer Booker T. Jones, and jazz trumpeter Chris Botti. Chris Botti. So, what do you know about today's featured artist, Carlos Santana? Well, according to this bio published in IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, by Steve Shalokanoff, we see this. Carlos Santana is a guitarist, composer, singer, and bandleader who helped shape the concept of world music by his experiments with blending many types of music from a multitude of ethnic sources. He was born Carlos Augusto Alves Santana on July 20, 1947, in Mexico. He's one of six children. From the age of five, young Santana learned the violin from his father, a professional mariachi violinist. He switched to guitar at the age of eight when the family moved to Tijuana. During the late 50s, he was playing gigs at clubs and bars with bands up and down the Tijuana Strip. In 1961, he moved to San Francisco, California. In 1966, he made his debut with a newly formed Santana Blues Band. Santana shot to fame after the legendary performance at Woodstock in 69. His surprise appearance was captured in the film Woodstock, which vastly increased his popularity. The psychedelic second album, titled Abraxas, 1970, reached number one on the album chart and went on to sell over 4 million copies worldwide. Three songs from that album, including Black Magic Woman, which is playing in the background now, became huge international hits. After years of touring, Santana participated in the first-ever joint U.S.-Soviet rock and roll summit in 1987. At that time, Santana evolved to become a multifaceted artist and prepared to reemerge as a conscientious member of society. He contributed to the benefit of San Francisco Earthquake Relief, Doctors Without Borders, Indigenous People Fund, Hispanic Media and Education Group, Amnesty International, L.A. Museum of Tolerance, and other charitable causes. In 1988, Carlos and his wife Deborah started the Milagro Foundation, which contributed $1.8 million to help underprivileged youths. Santana also contributed the profits of his 2003 Shaman Tour to fight AIDS. Supernatural, 1999, is considered by many to be his greatest work. It became Album of the Year, received 11 Grammy Awards, and sold over 25 million copies worldwide. It included such hits as Smooth, which is playing in the background now, and featured guest artist Rob Thomas, Matchbox 20 lead singer, Wyclef Jean, Eric Clapton, and Dave Matthews, among others. During the four decades of his career, Santana has been a true multicultural artist. His instantly identifiable blend of Latin salsa, blues, rock, and Afro-Cuban styles has been evolving with the inclusion of elements from jazz, fusion, and world beat. Santana's high-pitched and clean guitar sound has been coming out of his custom-made PRS guitars. His unique and instantly recognizable sound is legendary. With one note, people know me, says Carlos Santana. Is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, has sold over 90 million records, and has performed before over 100 million people globally. The following is from an interview with Carlos Santana by Kevin O'Hare and published in The Republican on November 19th, 2010. With a new album, a recently completed tour, and his own wedding in December, Carlos Santana has been particularly busy of late. Then again, the 63-year-old guitarist has rarely slowed down since he formed the Santana Blues Band in San Francisco back in 1966. Santana's latest album is Guitar Heaven, the greatest guitar classics of all time, co-produced by Santana's longtime mentor Clive Davis. It features Santana and numerous guest artists interpreting a series of rock standards such as Led Zeppelin's Whole Lotta Love, Cream's Sunshine of Your Love, The Beatles' While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and Jimi Hendrix's Little Wing. Just back from a string of European dates, Carlos Santana spoke candidly about his career, the new album, a recent return to Woodstock, his wedding, and much more. When you recorded the songs for the new album, were the singers in the studios with you at the time, or did they dub their vocals later on?
What was the second one? We mainly made the bed. I set the tone with tempo, feel, and groove. I set the bed so the feel, the groove, and the tempo are at a certain place where you can put whatever song you want on top. If the bed has lumps, the lovers are not going to have fun. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who has to play those songs until the day I die. Whether it's El Como Va Black Magic Woman, they do have a feel and a groove, so when you hear it, it's, ah, yes. Whether it's in the sound check or in the studio, those three things are imperative to me. I trust, key word, I trust that when the singers jump into the song, they're going to go to that place where their best is going to come out, because they don't have to wrestle. There's going to be a flow.
Some of the songs on Guitar Heaven are very faithful to the originals. Some are dramatic reworkings. For example, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which is playing in the background now, has a very distinct arrangement. What inspired that, and did you know Jerry Harrison, the song's writer?
Yes, I met him one time with Eric Clapton in London in an after-hours place. We sat there, sang songs, and just reminisced. There were a couple of ladies from the Supremes there as well. The reason that song sounds differently is because I love Wes Montgomery's way of interpreting Beatles songs. So I thought about Montgomery doing Beatles tunes with chamber music as an intro. And I thought, well, why don't we try Yo-Yo Ma in this song? It was easier to take that song to the kind of place that is completely new and totally familiar.
You recorded Jimi Hendrix's Little Wing with a fellow Woodstock vet, Joe Cocker. Did you talk to him at all about that?
Yes, I saw Joe not too long ago. He opened for Tom Petty. We were backstage before he went on, and he said, Carlos, can you believe we've been doing this since 67? And I said, Joe, we used to be charcoals. Now we're diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
He started laughing. It's an honor to work with Joe. He's a singer who's absolutely incapable of faking anything. The guy is pure, genuine sincerity. Just one note, and you know it comes from something pristinely true. That's not one odor that's fake or plastic. The guy's a hippie, hippie, hippie. He may wear a suit and tie if he wants to, but there was a reason why he was one of the highlights at Woodstock. There are no squares at Woodstock. There were no plastic people at Woodstock.
No one told me about her, the way she lied. Well, no one told me about her, how many people cried.
Did you get to see some of the other performers at Woodstock?
Yes. But I remember very little because I was at the peak of LSD.
You played at the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts this summer on the site of the Woodstock Festival, and you toured the exhibition about the festival that they have in the museum. What was that like for you?
Yes, I did, and it was wonderful. Because of the concert we were doing, there were a lot of people at the museum who knew I was going to show up. And I heard my voice say to them, "So we meet again." Which is something that Jimi Hendrix used to say. I'm just really grateful. It's a long life, I've had many blessings, great longevity, and for the most part, it's been pretty much consistent with excellence.
Well, how did you decide to do Can't You Hear Me Knockin' on the new album with all the percussion parts? That one might be the one with the most obvious traditional Santana sound.
Well, the Stones were listening to Santana as well. Their guitarist, Mick Taylor, was listening to the same things we were listening to, which was like Eddie Harris, Les McCann, Herbie Mann, and Tito Puente. All I know is that when we came out, all of a sudden Fleetwood Mac, Miles Davis, Sly Stone, the Rolling Stones, and Jimi Hendrix all had congas, which told me we were on the right path. They understand that timbales and congas made the women happy.
Hmm.
Immediately they start dancing. They don't dance like they're catching butterflies. They dance like they've got something good, which you've got to have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big difference. You can dance like you're catching butterfly and you're all spaced out, or you can dance like, hey, I've got something right here, which you've got to have. There was a time in 67, 68, and even 69 where even Steppenwolf on Born to be Wild, all the songs, though not totally Puerto Ricanized or Cubanized, they got that rhythm thing. Even Chicago. All of a sudden I realized the Rolling Stones were listening to Santana. Even the Stones.
Hmm. You did Riders on the Storm on that album with Ray Mazarax of The Doors on keyboards. I understand you were a huge fan of The Doors.
Riders on the Storm. Riders on the Storm.
I still am. I'm a huge fan of The Doors and AC/DC because of the groove. They're groove makers and mood setters. The first album I ever bought was The Doors because my mom allowed me to keep my money. I was working for a living washing dishes, but I always gave my check, all of it, to my mom. That was the first time she said, "Well, here, take some of this money." So with the money that she gave me, I bought The Doors and Little Walter's Greatest Hits.
Well, thank you, Carlos, for coming into the TRS studio, and thank you, Wayne Stallings, for reading his lines in this scripted interview.
It was my pleasure.
So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? The answer to number one, actually only answer C, Semper Fidelis, was the earliest recorded number one hit, is true. The rest are myths, although Frank Zappa's songbook includes Mr. Green Jeans, two words, and son of Mr. Green Jeans. He is actually the son of a Sicilian immigrant, Francis Zappa. And although Simmons' tongue is abnormally long, the fact is that 70s medical technology didn't extend to successfully attaching animal parts to humans, and a cow's tongue looks nothing like any human's tongue. Finally, although the statistics were probably made up by overzealous salesmen, record charts first appeared in the U.S. as early as 1890, and the earliest recorded number one hit was Semper Fidelis by the U.S. Marine Band. And finally, answer number two, the first band to be recognized with a platinum album was the Eagles, answer B, for their greatest hits, 1971 to 1975. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long, until next time.